Welcome to the Innovation Calling Podcast,
where we connect creators for the next big thing. We're your hosts, Aaron Greger
and Sia Yasotornrat.
Hey, it's Aaron Greger.
And it's Sia Yasotornrat.
Welcome, welcome. It's another episode of Innovation Calling. For the first time, like, Sia and I are sitting here lost because we have nothing to promote. But we've got, actually, Sia, what should we be celebrating instead?
We actually have a announcement, which is we are celebrating our dun 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 1 year anniversary for Innovation Calling Podcast.
Yeah, October 1st was our official publish date. I was laughing because I won't get into why, but just it took us a while to get here. It was definitely was not a year, several years before that, but I can't believe it's officially been a year that we have been publishing podcast episodes. It's been a I'm so honored with the people we've met over this past year.
And just the amount of humility, the knowledge across everyone, different industries, different points of technology, how they've leveraged emerging technology. I actually didn't know what to expect. I think conceptually when we were talking about it, I kind of thought that there was potential for us to learn, but this has surpassed my expectations, Aaron. Has it done it for you?
Well, they always say you should be the dumbest person in the room. I feel like this is not a knock on you, but every time we're sitting in a studio, we're pretty much the dumbest people in the room. So it's a good thing for us because it elevates us. I mean, I feel like I've gotten smarter doing these, and I've, like I said, I've learned so much. So thank you to all of you who have listened, who have subscribed, who have shared, who have come to our events. If you have not subscribed, if you have not rated and reviewed, please do so, because we'll thank you once you do. It just means the world to us, because the goal is we have many more years to come on this thing.
Absolutely. And, you know, we can't do it without your support. And for my family and friends, colleagues that have actually showed up to our Women in Tech Leadership events, I note the time commitment to sit and actually watch us do our recording. But the feedback we've gotten is the networking, the collaboration amongst one another, and having accessibility to some of these amazing leaders. We've gotten a lot of great feedback on. So if you've not attended yet, definitely attend our monthly events, and we'd love to have you.
Yeah, our next one will be in November, and that's to be announced soon.
Yes.
Yes, yes.
All right. So today was a fun conversation. Yes. I know, once again, C and I were the dumbest people in the room. But we learned a lot. So we welcomed John Davidson, who's the esports director of business development over at PRG, which is a production company. Sia, what did you think of this one?
Oh, my gosh. I think, again, when you are learning something new and you are excited by it, that to me means you're growing as a person. For me, we've been using the word esports and e-gaming interchangeably. And boy, did we get educated today.
Yeah, in a nice way.
Absolutely. Oh, no, absolutely positive way. But my apologies for everyone that listened and probably wanted to scream at us when we were using it. We now know not to use it as the same word or concept because it's two different things.
Yeah, but we got a lot into the history of esports, the future of esports, what's coming up, like with events specifically, since that's John's world. I know C and I will be going to an event. There's a lot coming. He told us about Dallas in next year. So I'm excited to get a little more immersed into this world. You'll never see me playing, but I'm definitely excited to get more into this. So without further ado, here's our conversation with John Davidson. All right. So John, welcome to our podcast. Thank you so much for being here. I know I've been trying to connect with you. You had some changes going on that we couldn't come on right away. So I'm really excited that you were able to come. We're going to jump into esports because basically you have to be living under a rock if you haven't heard about esports lately. And as a gamer, or I'm not a gamer. I'm going to admit this. As a non-gamer, I never beat the dragon in Mario Brothers. So that is how lame I am about gaming. And that was the end of my gaming. But even I know all about it and have learned about it. So let's jump into your history a little bit. You started out skateboarding, and you've been, we were talking beforehand, and you've been in esports for a very long time. I'm using quotes, but it's like dog ears kind of thing. You've been in for a year, which is like 10. So can you talk a little bit about your journey? You don't have to go through the whole thing, but from skateboarding specifically, how you ended up in esports.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't draw a straight line from where I started to where I am today. But there's been a number of, I want to say, forks in the road that kind of got me to where I am today. So I started skateboarding when I was 11. I got sponsored when I was 14. If you've seen me in person, I'm not the tallest person in the room. And so when I got into high school, I was pretty athletic, played every sport. Everybody else, you know, grew a ton and I didn't. And then I also got some bad grades. So my mom grounded me from playing sports and skateboarding took off, got some sponsors, stuff like that. Around, let's see, right after I graduated from high school, I wasn't sure what I was going to do. It kind of hit me like, oh my gosh, is skateboarding just going to be a hobby? And I really had a knack for welding growing up, randomly.
Very random.
And so I was actually planning to become a welder. I was signed up for classes at my community college to do all these welding courses. Well, I had these large gaps in my school schedule, just hours of free time. And I would go to this skate shop that I skated for, that I was sponsored by. And I always wanted to work there, but they would never hire me because it's kind of a conflict of interest, you know, sponsored rider, employee. Well, one day I went there and they were so busy. They were like, John, can you help out at all? Can you just go back to the skateboard wall and tell people about, help them find the right skateboard? Well, at that point, I was 19, so I've been skateboarding for 8 years. I had no idea how much I knew about skateboarding and the products until I started selling them.
Yeah.
And in skateboarding, the smallest intricacies make such a big difference. So like an eighth of an inch of the width of a skateboard makes a difference. And there's different wheels that are different sizes and different trucks that are better for grinding or better for technical tricks and stuff. And I just spent, you know, these 2 or 3 hours talking to people about skateboards and helping them find it. Fell in love with it so much that I went to the school counselor's office the next day and switched all my classes to business. So that was one fork in the road.
Was the business idea to build your own skate shop or
no, did you know what you wanted to do with that? I didn't know what I wanted to do specifically yet, but I just was so fascinated with selling the products and talking about them. Mm-hmm. At that point, the jobs that I had was pizza delivery. I ended up being an assistant manager at a pizza place. So that was kind of my work experience at the time. I didn't have a lot of really entrepreneurial background. My dad worked at a factory. My mom was a school teacher. So, you know, I didn't really see the business firsthand, but it was just, you know, my interest. I was like, oh, I want to do this. And so I took some marketing classes and then I dropped out of school, as one does.
logical thing to do. Yeah.
I took a 3-year hiatus. I understand completely what you're talking about.
Yeah. So I had a sponsor in Florida and they were like, hey, John, you should move out here. The rest of the team is out here and stuff. And, you know, my focus was on skateboarding more than my studies, and my grades reflected that. And so I just said, you know what, I'm going to move to Orlando. So moved out there. You know, the Cliff's Notes version had a number of really tough jobs. Ended up 1 year later coming back to the Bay Area of California. Worked while I continued to search for my skateboarding opportunities. Got on a skateboard tour that ended up being 6 months of tour.
Wow.
Vans and hotels. So nice. I thought I was going to be gone for 2 months and I didn't really own much of anything, which I sold. And I was like, let's see how this goes. First day I got there, they said, we got more funding. We got more dates. You're going to be on tour for 6 months. And I was like, perfect. I have nowhere to be.
No obligations.
I have no appointments.
Perfect thing, yeah, for when you're that young and you have a passion.
Well, so was it a national tour or was it international?
National, yeah, it was all within the U.S. So we would go to all these music festivals, amusement parks. We went to Six Flags one time, and I got to ride every ride in like 15 minutes because
you got to get rushed through because you're the talent.
The exits instead of in line, completely ruined amusement parks.
Yeah, that sucks now for you. So how did you end up from your skating, you're doing all this stuff, to esports?
Yeah, so I ended up in Washington, D.C. I broke my ankle at the end of that tour, and I had no idea what I wanted to do for a job. I'd had all these crappy jobs. I'd just come from this bubble of the skateboarding world for 6 months. I ended up as a temp at a tax firm that happened to be one of the top 50 best places to work in D.C. And so that was a pivotal moment because it showed me that an office job could be enjoyable, could
Especially
be cool.
That's interesting that you liked it and you were in numbers and... Yeah.
Right.
Well, yeah. What were you doing exactly for them?
So I started out as a temp just you know, bottom of the barrel stuff. I was just, you know, filling up printer paper and printers. I was delivering the mail. I was covering the receptionist lunch hour.
Oh, wow.
And then I got hired on full time because they moved to a bigger office mm-hmm. and they had all these catered meetings every day, like 5 to 7 catered meetings a day. And they had 16 conference rooms or something like that. And so they needed somebody to manage all the catering in the conference rooms. And then I got into preparing the tax returns and financial statements, stapling these like 200 pages together. It doesn't wow. sound very appetizing, but the people I worked with were so cool, were so great. They had such a focus on culture. And so it showed me that it's not even so much what you're doing, but who you're doing it with that can be enjoyable. And so I was there for a couple of years and it showed me that, okay, office job can be a positive thing, but I don't want to be, number one, I don't want to be in the tax industry. But number two, I don't want to lose out on a promotion or have a ceiling on my income because I don't have a degree. So I did that for 2 years and I said, okay, I'm going to go back to school, went back to where I grew up, Reedley, California, went to Fresno Community College, and then got my degree at Sacramento State. And so what moved me out here to Dallas was a friend of mine that I met in Washington, D.C., was a great graphic designer and animator. He started his own freelance business. I came out here to join him. I was the business. He was the creative. Did that for 5 years. Then I joined the marketing arm, and this is where, as a producer, this is where the esports stuff comes in. GameStop was a client of the marketing arm, and so there was an opportunity to join that team. And at first, it was a project manager position, which I was not hyped on in any way. But I'm very much pursue opportunity and see where it goes and get your foot in the door and then wiggle around to where you want to be. They had 5 weeks that I was just like waiting to join the team because they were figuring out the retainer. They came up with a partnership position. And so they're like, John, you know, you're probably better suited for partnerships than project management. I was like, yep, agreed. So I ended up getting hired for this partnership position on the agency side. Just 3 weeks later, the brand hired me on full time on their side because it's really complicated to have somebody embedded at the place. But on the agency side, it's weird. And then my first day at GameStop, they said, we want you to figure out esports for us.
How many years ago was this?
This was 2.5 years ago, almost 3 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. So I was like, okay. And major challenge because number one, GameStop's very sales focused. Mm-hmm. So the goal was how do we make money doing it, which makes sense. But, you know, a lot of marketing, what I would say to a lot of brands is, you know, your KPIs should not necessarily be sales, but be loyalty, brand affinity, positive sentiment, win over the community, and sales will come from that. But at GameStop, number one, it's more focused on console than PC. And esports is primarily PC gaming. So it's like, okay, we're going to take away the vast majority of that. And you're just talking about console games. It's like Madden, NBA 2K, et cetera. And then the thing is, esports titles are either old or free the vast majority of the time. So you're not really going to have an opportunity to sell a new game that often. Now, you do have some, you know, some games like Call of Duty, NBA 2K, Madden come out every year, right? So they're annual. But by the time people start competing is way after they release. And so the sales cycle is a massive spike when a game comes out, and then it dives down immediately. Because everybody wants to play the game first. But in the esports industry, everybody buys the game, learns the game, and then they compete a month or later on. So if you were to show up to any esports event and hope to sell a video game, you're not going to because everybody already owns
it. They already have it.
So, you know, we discovered what are those opportunities to sell. And, you know, a lot of it is like great brands like HyperX and Scuf and these peripheral brands that you can buy at any time, regardless of any game, PC or console. And then we developed a number of partnerships and stuff to engage the audience and focused on unique content, things like that. So
I'm not trying to throw GameStop under the bus, but
me either.
No, but I want to try to talk about this without doing that, but only 2.5 years ago is when they started moving in this. It feels like they should have been on this 10 years ago. And I get that you're talking like gaming or like PC versus games. I'm trying to figure out how to ask this question.
No, I'll ask it.
Okay, go.
What the hell took them so long? I mean, I would think GameStop would have been the forefront 5, 10 years ago to say, this is going to be the next wave. So was there an error in there? Their strategy to recognize esports?
I would say that it was maybe the Well, you have to see things from their perspective. And I'm not going to say that the way they did it was the right way.
Right.
But I also want to, but there's some logic behind, mm-hmm. even if it's flawed. You know, it was thought through. So number one, way back in the day, GameStop used to do these Madden tournaments and they did some Street Fighter tournaments and stuff. In fact, a pro gamer, Justin Wong, who is a guy who we partnered with, he plays Street Fighter and Tekken, and he first kind of got his start into professional esports through GameStop tournaments. So it's this cool organic story. But the thing that people don't understand, GameStop is gaming as a whole. And the game industry, the video games industry, and the esports industry are not one and the same.
See, and I never would have known that, but keep going.
So, yeah, I was just going to ask you just to define the two, because I've heard people tell me you're talking about two different things.
Right. So esports is within gaming, which is much broader. So the video game industry is the biggest entertainment industry in the world. It's $150 billion. Esports is about $1 billion. And so when you look at all the different, wow. all the revenue, I'd have to do the math nowadays, but about a year ago, I saw a stat that esports, the revenue in esports was 6% of gaming as a whole. And so the difference between esports and video games, regular or broader video games, is that esports are competitive video games that have enough of a fan base to create a league, a professional league.
Yeah.
Okay.
So one of the things, I kind of struggle with the title esports. The reason is it immediately starts a debate about whether it's a sport or not, which I think, I don't think it's...
That's a whole other podcast.
Necessary. Yeah. Exactly. So I prefer the term competitive gaming because it's a better descriptor of what it is. So when you look at from GameStop's perspective, if you were to spend time, energy, resources, would you do it on the 94% or the 6% of the revenue? Right.
Okay.
But what I think was overlooked, I always say that esports is the minority of the revenue, but it's the majority of the passion, right? It's really a passion point. I always say that esports has made gaming sponsorable.
Yeah.
So if you look at non-competitive games, you look at like Red Dead, Spider-Man, God of War, which last 2 years were the biggest games in the world. How do you sponsor those? How do you integrate with those from a sponsorship, partnership standpoint? It's really difficult. But when you look at esports, all of a sudden, okay, I have events, right? I've got a calendar. I've got venues. I've got websites. I've got social. I've got all of these
hours of live streaming. Yeah.
Right. I've got these assets that I can sponsor. And then Overwatch League, which is one of the esports titles. So Overwatch League has made it more sponsorable by having geographically located teams. So for the first time ever, and they're doing this with Call of Duty next year as well, but for the first time ever, like Dallas has the Dallas Fuel, San Francisco has the San Francisco Shock, et cetera. They have 20 teams globally. And what's been really cool is not only does it make it more sponsorable, mm-hmm. but there's a big question around whether the community would gravitate around the city they live in.
Exactly.
Like we see in traditional sports.
Yep.
And the answer is absolutely yes.
Yeah, the tribe mentality, I can absolutely see it. And because it has an international reach, because basically you can stage a tournament worldwide, couldn't you, potentially?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And live stream it. I mean, take on all the technology. I think, could you argue esports grew as a result of our technology now embracing and our social media embracing it to make it sponsorable? So Twitch, for example.
Yeah,
100%.
If Twitch didn't exist, could esports really blow up the way it did?
Yeah, I think the two main things that have created this massive, you know, lift in popularity is it's the technology piece of it that we, you know, we're able to stream and stuff like we haven't before. But it's also that gaming has gone mainstream. So in the past where you had maybe the kids who are more into gaming weren't on the football team. Now, one of the most popular gamers in the world is Juju Smith-Schuster, star wide receiver for the Pittsburgh Steelers, right?
Oh.
So the fact that everybody is a gamer now is huge. And then the fact that we have the technology to then reach everybody and also so many different people to reach, right? Because you don't have to go through traditional broadcasting channels. In fact, it's those channels who are losing subscribers and trying to figure out how to gain an audience.
Capture that audience.
And instead you have people in their bedroom with a webcam who can generate, you know, hundreds of thousands of viewers.
Oh, and money. I mean, let's be, and it's monetized, right?
Yes.
Well, okay, let's be frank here. My boyfriend is in his mid-40s and he's a gamer.
Yep.
couldn't it also be argued, yes, technology's now enabled it, social media's backed it up, culturally it's been accepted. But let's be honest, now we're in that demographic, they have disposable income to actually make those investments, that the sponsorship dollars actually have some viable return.
That's true.
Couldn't it be argued to say these are not just 14-year-old Fortnite players? In fact, these YouTube videos I'm watching are old adults with 5-year-olds watching them play a game. It's so crazy to me.
Older adults, don't call them old.
Hey, they'd be old.
Sure. Yeah, a lot of the...
You 50-year-old players, okay.
Yeah, you have a lot of streamers that are, you know, late 20s, early 30s.
Yeah.
And yeah, so there's a disposable... Yeah, you could say disposable income. I think, too, just opportunity is exponential, right? So when you see one person do it, you see another person do it. There's a lot more power in having seen somebody do something and saying that's possible, right? Than somebody going for the impossible and just saying, man, you know, I'm going to keep playing this game and I'm going to make YouTube videos and I just believe that people are going to watch me do it. That was, you know, like the Hector Rodriguez's in the world who grew these great fan bases. But nowadays, you just look at, you know, the kid, the Fortnite World Cup kid who won $3 million, or you look at Ninja and you say, look, mom, I could get, you know, major sponsorship brand deals. I can make a living doing this because people are doing it. And I think that's true in a lot of ways is, you know, traditional sports, other categories, that somebody does it first and then people realize it's possible. I'm going to go do it.
Well, it's like baseball. Look at Babe Ruth. You know, I mean, nobody ever thought kids playing in their backyard, baseball, whatever, come to fruition. Now you've got how many million? So it's almost to that point where it was a fun pastime for a lot of kids.
Right.
Now it's some serious money.
I think the success of a sport of anything needs to be to humanize it. You need some rallying points. You need some celebrities, if you will, of that industry.
Right.
And I think the fact that there are superstars now in the esports world, that now people can rally around them. So there's, I think, multiple components. The geographic, hometown, tribal community of go Dallas, right? Go San Francisco, whatever. And then you have, I don't know any gamer. Sorry. Billy or Mary, you know, let's root for Mary. Mary's coming on.
Use
you know?
Ninja. He's the one everybody knows.
Oh, okay, yeah. Ninja. Sorry.
Yeah, you could use that.
Okay. Go Ninja.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, all the code words. I don't know your guys' nicknames and call names. But that's the first time that I think you're seeing, you know, personalities. And I think that was one of the things where, unless you were an amazing football player, wide receiver, making all the things, you probably wouldn't recognize their faces because they've got the helmets covering. Much like now.
Yeah, that's I think a major issue with NFL players versus like NBA.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Is that number one, you can't buy their shoes because you don't want to walk around in cleats.
Well,
but you can walk around in Jordans or LeBrons, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think long story short, you see people doing it. You know, the other thing too is there's more opportunity beyond just competitive players because the streamers and esports pros are not necessarily the same thing.
Okay, let's talk about the difference between a streamer and a player.
Yeah, so there are a number of streamers that do not compete at the highest level, but they're engaging, they're fun to watch. They could, you know, maybe be great coaches, things of that nature. And you have these, a lot of the pros that you'll see, not all of them, I don't want to stereotype, of course, but a lot of the pros are not outgoing. Let's say,
okay.
Right?
That's all right.
And so if a lot of these top players, if you were to put them on a stream, I mean, it would be amazing to watch somebody play at the highest level in the world, but from a commentary, from an engagement standpoint, probably lower. You know, when you see the Fortnite World Cup, that was one of those eye-opening things because you had these guys like Tfue and Ninja and these guys who are just major streamers with massive audiences. They did not get first and second.
Right.
And so who was winning? These 14, 15-year-old kids that you're just like, holy crap, your mom and dad just let you play this all the time. It's amazing.
Well, we actually made a comment on a last podcast about that, about knowing that your 14-year-old kid could potentially make millions of dollars. Would you, if you see potential in them, would you say get off that video game or would you encourage it now? It's a different shift.
Yeah. I don't know what potential is, though.
Well, it's just like everything else, though. Like, what is the percentage of being a pro athlete, like 0.3%,
right,
or something like that. So it's probably similar for pro gaming. And, you know, I have a son, so he's not yet, you know, I don't have him playing video games. We're focusing on playing outside a lot. He chases me while I ride my skateboard mostly. But what I always encourage young people to pursue a background in business. whether that be traditional education, whether it be mentorship, whatever. Because at some point, whatever you're competing in at the highest level, you're not going to be able to compete in anymore. And then you have the rest of your life left, right? And so I always say a background in education teaches you how to make money doing what you love, or sometimes more importantly, how to avoid what you love, which doesn't make any money.
Right.
Like when I first got my degree and I started out in business, everybody was like, oh, John, you're going to open a skate shop? I was like, no, I can't afford to lose enough money to run a skate shop. Like maybe one day, you know, I'll have some disposable income and I can be like a hobby, you know, mm-hmm. just to surround myself with the stuff I love and be able to lose a little money doing it. But, you know, skate shops don't make any money. So in the same way, what I would do, you know, looking years forward with my son potentially is like, hey, you enjoy these games, do it as much as is healthy, but also understand every single piece surrounding this industry. In fact, one of the things I'm working on, I'm working on a lot of stuff that I don't have time to do.
Welcome to life, yeah.
Yeah, but is for collegiate programs, there's a great opportunity to produce esports events for the, you know, that school's club and the surrounding school's clubs produced by the student body. Because an esports event touches so many different departments. You know, you have marketing doing partnerships with local people. You have creative doing the branding for the event. You have criminal justice students doing security for it, right? Communications doing broadcasting. I mean, and so this is something I'm working on with a couple of different schools to see what we can do with it. But when you experience all of these opportunities, all of these jobs, you might, number one, say, oh, this, I'm really interested in marketing. And then you find out what the day-to-day is and you're like, oh, I'm not interested in marketing anymore.
Yeah.
Or you may come across something else that you didn't even know was a job. You're like, wait a minute, social media community manager? Like, I could be on Twitter just commenting to people all the time? That's cool.
Yeah. Well, let's move into the mainstream now because you're talking about colleges. I know there's still talk about, you know, maybe you will see one day that there's scholarships for esports. Like, I know it's a long way off, but
there already are. There are.
Are there?
Yeah, last few years there's been.
I didn't know started. That. I thought it was in the future thing. That's crazy. So it is. You see it in the mainstream. It, being in Dallas, you got Jerry Jones buying into things. You see a lot of main sports, traditional sports. Yeah. Yes, buying into this. Can you talk a little bit about that and what we're as we're moving esports? What we're going to see in the future?
Yeah, so one thing is that, you know, traditional sports teams are seeing engagement level off. So attendance, viewership, young people are not watching traditional television.
Yeah.
Right? They're online, they're on their phones all the time. Everybody's gaming. And so people, you know, these billionaires, they're always just looking ahead at the trends and saying, whether it affects my team or not. I mean, imagine how many things Jerry Jones has his hands in that aren't associated with the Cowboys, right? And same with Mark Cuban, lots of things. So, you know, they're looking at the trends and say, okay, everybody's doing this. How do I be involved? But also, it, you know, it directly affects the teams that they own because they're seeing viewership and attendance decrease. So, and then you have it from the league side of things. Every traditional sports league, NBA, I don't know if Major League Baseball is doing anything yet.
Yeah, I don't know either.
That'd be a rough one. NFL and NHL.
it's boring on gaming too. Yeah. That'd be Major League Baseball, but yeah, keep going.
Well, one thing, you know, they're all doing their own leagues, right? Oh, yeah. Major League Soccer as well. They're doing EMLS with FIFA, NBA 2K League with NBA, Madden Championship Series with the NFL. And so I think all these teams are just, I think, saying, kids just want to do the virtual version of my physical sport. And I don't think that's true. I think kids have specific games that they want to play. They may have nothing to do with a traditional sport. And I think that's the way that you engage people.
Yeah.
And it's a little more complicated because obviously if you're the NFL and if every kid just wanted to play Madden instead of watch a football game and they're like, oh, you know, now come to my football games. That would be pretty simple and best case scenario. But I think kids are, you know, they want to play League of Legends, they want to play Fortnite, they want to play Overwatch. And so if you have ways to engage those people with what they're already doing, so go to them and enable what they're already doing rather than trying to get them to come to you. So one cool integration of that with Fortnite was the NFL collaborated with Fortnite and they did NFL jerseys as skins in the game. And so a lot of Fortnite
placement,
is,
yeah, basically.
Yeah, very similar. So a lot of
interesting.
Yeah, a lot of, you know, Fortnite's revenue comes from in-game purchases. In fact, the vast majority. And so by going, by rather than saying, hey, Fortnite, come to a tournament with us, we're the big, bad, powerful NFL, the fact that they went to them and said, hey, you know, we want to integrate in what you're doing and work together to do this, I thought that was one of the coolest collaborations I'd seen.
So this is a question that's going to come out of ignorance, and I apologize, but like you know, we talk League of Legends, like those are the big ones that you talk about, the tournaments and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Are there tournaments with the sports ones, and are they like, is it a huge attendance difference? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out game plan of the future if people aren't as actively in the competition side of FIFA versus mm-hmm. Fortnite. You know what I mean?
So are you asking if, are the sports video games, do they have...
Yeah, do they have big tournaments, and is it a...
Yes, they do.
And is it the same type of level of an event that you would see with...
A Fortnite
League of Legends, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great question. So, yes, they are. In fact, they have their own leagues. So
yeah.
The NBA 2K League is 5-on-5 pro gamers playing each other. They have their own avatar. It's just like any other esports league. It's a little bit similar to basketball. And so they do have this league, and you know, they hope that integrates into people mm-hmm. becoming, you know,
yeah.
engaging the youth, but also becoming fans of the NBA. What's interesting, EMLS is Major League Soccer's FIFA tournament. It's a global tournament. And what I've been told by them is that 60% of their fan base of the traditional sport comes in through FIFA.
Wow.
Which is amazing, but that is unique to mm-hmm. that game. So you can't just rinse and repeat and say, oh, this is the answer for everything. And that's something that is very often overlooked. This drives me crazy. People talk about esports in a very different way than we talk about sports. We never say, are you engaging the sports audience? It's right. 7 billion people globally. You know, it's like, no, of course you don't talk that way.
Right.
What you say is, hey, this is the fan base for the NBA. Major League Baseball, you'd reach people very differently than the NFL, right? They're different people. And so esports is comprised about 18 to 20 different competitive video games. They all have different demographics, yeah. different types of fan bases, even within the same genre. So a perfect example in the fighting game community. So Smash is a big game, and then you have Street Fighter is another big game. Completely different types of people. Street Fighter, you see a lot of people talking trash and
mm-hmm. more adult, competitive.
Right.
I think.
And then Smash, people are giving each other high fives and hugging, and you know, it's just a different vibe. It's really interesting. So that's some of the work that I think our industry needs to do, is to better communicate how these audiences are segmented, who you want to reach, and who these different audiences by title are. So if I'm, you know, let's say X brand, and I want to reach X demographic, I could find out, oh, I should be sponsoring Dota 2 instead of Overwatch, or vice versa, right? So that's some of the work that I think will help enhance the space.
Interesting.
I just can't. I've never been to a gaming event. We keep talking about we need to because
yeah.
it sounds so cool conceptually.
Next year, Dallas is going to have a bunch of events. I don't know if they've said how many, so I won't say publicly, but they'll have a number of home market events all over the DFW area.
Really?
And those would be great opportunities for both Call of Duty and Overwatch.
Okay, because for me, it's like, for me, I always use Red Dead Redemption as my go-to because I really like it,
yeah.
but I don't know how to play it. I just tell my boyfriend what to do. And it's like, for me...
How does he like that?
Oh, he absolutely does not love it, but he'll give me like 15 minutes to let me direct him.
Yeah.
And usually it's just me just messing around and like, you know, go pet the dog or whatever, right?
Right.
I'm a friendly version of my Red Dead Redemption. But
I was going to say that, yeah, that doesn't sound like Red Dead petting dogs. It's more...
Well,
killing people.
Well, that was GTA for me. That's a different story altogether,
okay.
which I'm trying to be PG about because I definitely told him to do other things on that game. But from a esports perspective, though, it would seem like to me, like I'm assuming you have, like, if I envision it correctly, you've got a bunch of screens where you can watch different players play from a spectator perspective, and you're just watching them play. Is that how it works? Like,
so
I don't understand
typically,
what that looks like.
So it varies depending on the event. So I was in Philadelphia a couple weekends ago for the Overwatch League finals, which was amazing. It's one of those it's a global finals event, so it's a Super Bowl type scenario, right?
So crazy.
So it was in, they filled up the Philadelphia Flyers NHL stadium, which the capacity, I believe, is 18,000. It was full, but, you know, part of it was blocked by a screen. Right. So not every seat was available to be sat in. So I don't know what the official attendance was, but it was sold out. They had a massive LED screen, and they had two teams playing against each other.
On stage or?
On a stage, okay. Big LED screen. And so that was an example of you just have two teams going against each other. Other Overwatch events, you have multiple teams going against each other, but they're taking turns. You know, it's the San Francisco Shock versus the LA Gladiators. They play. And then you have the Dallas Fuel and the Florida Mayhem.
Like a tournament style, kind of like breaking it down?
Yeah, similar to that. And then you have other types of events. So Call of Duty World League, which is switching its format. But in the past, it was like an open tournament. So you could qualify in. So the first couple of days, so they have all these computers set up, all these screens where teams are coming in and competing against each other in these open brackets to qualify to get into the main one. And then the last day or two, they have a big stage, big screen, and it's two teams playing against each other one time. You have other events like Evo, which is focused on fighting games. They have one in Japan. They have one in Vegas. And they've got tons of tournaments going on, all sorts of different games. Excuse me. You have more like festivals like DreamHack, which have music and tons of different games. So it really varies quite a bit as far as the format. I think there's a ton of opportunity in the format and what's effective. That's a lot of what I'm working at for PRG, leading business development esports for them. So one of the things that's limiting in traditional sports is you have to be around a field or a court,
yeah,
or whatever it is, right? And so you have to have that in the center for people to watch it. Esports, we've kind of just automatically gone to the rock show model where you have a stage and a big screen and an audience, but it doesn't have to be that way. The Fortnite World Cup was in the round. It was everybody in the middle with people around it, but it doesn't have to be that way either. And so that's one thing I'm working with these geniuses that work at PRG who are amazing engineers and have, you know, 30 years of, you know, one of our guys, he's the creative director for YouTube for 30 years or something like that. And so these people, their imaginations being able to completely rethink, you know, the event experience. So that's something that's coming that I'm excited to help with.
So what, go ahead.
Well, it's like with PRG, with whom you're with now, I was looking at their history. Yeah. Now I'm dating myself. I didn't realize.
Don't do it.
Okay, I won't do it then.
No, just kidding.
Well, I didn't realize you guys, this company was one of the original productions providers. I don't know what the correct terms are, but for Phantom of the Opera back in the 80s.
Exactly. In fact, the first piece of moving, and, you know, I'm not familiar with all the terminology either, but moving stage equipment, we'll say,
yeah,
was for Phantom of the Opera by the founder of PRG.
Yeah, no, I mean, I grew up obsessed with that play. So
the first animatronic light was also PRG, which was on a tour with The Who. So this is a company that, you know, started in Broadway, started with lighting, through acquisitions, through innovation, has become the leading entertainment production company in the world, with 73 offices in 17 countries on 5 continents.
I mean, this is why it doesn't surprise me that they are producing these esports events.
Right. And so what I'm excited about, because a lot of people don't know what PRG has done in the esports space. And, you know, they brought me on to really build a strategy and to, you know, the connections I've made through a lot of friendships and my time at GameStop to be able to, you know, be proactive in the space. But even just being reactive before I got there, we were the main producer in the Fortnite World Cup, which is one of the biggest events to date. We've done a number of international League of Legends events for their tour, Madden Championship Series, DreamHack, Gamescom in Germany. So doing quite a bit in the space. And what I want to do, though, is in addition to just producing the Fortnite World Cups of the world, is also support the Rockstar tournament organizers who don't have the resources to do what they want to do, you know, to produce the biggest and best events in the world, but also support the grassroots level. And so that's one thing I'm working to develop right now that I'm really excited about, is connecting with these people who have been grinding for years, who have the passion, who have the knowledge, who have the ability to do amazing things, but they just don't have the resources that somebody like a PRG does.
Yeah.
And so that's something that we're going to be doing, is supporting the grassroots through that, because I think it's so important that every brand that comes in this space, doesn't just come in to take it over. It doesn't just come in for, you know, their own financial benefit, but actually supports the space, helps with the professionalism and the growth of the space, and, you know, rising tides raises all boats sort of a thing.
I love it. Well, okay, so with the event space, there's got to be, as far as it's come, like you said, there's a lot of opportunity to change it to any other, like, for the future of these gaming events, what's next for them? Because, I mean,
yeah,
I feel like we're just at the very tip of the beginning of this whole thing.
Totally. I think a lot of it is figuring out, I think it all comes down to the event experience in person and at home. Mm-hmm. Because one thing that is really cool about the gaming space as a whole, if there was ever a group of people who had a reason not to get together in person, it would be gamers, right? Because yeah. They're connected online much more than any community. Yeah. They're very digitally savvy and all that. But when you think of passion, you think of people getting together, engaging, you think of events like E3, Comic-Con,
yeah,
people coming out, not only just attending, but participating, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that just so there's something within us that just craves that human interaction, that regardless of what you enjoy doing, you're always wanting to get together with like-minded people. And so that's one of the big things now, is that these like-minded people who have been remote are now able to congregate together at places like the Overwatch League Finals, and there's home market events and stuff, right? So I think the events are really cool in person if you know the game and you play the game. A number of these games are very difficult to follow if you don't play the game. So you might be watching Overwatch and it's all these just flashes of light, and you don't know what's going on, and the crowd just starts cheering, and you're like, oh, yeah.
I missed something. Okay, all righty.
Something happened. So the growth in the industry is going to come from the casual viewer, right? Because all the core gamers are already engaged.
Yeah, yep, they're already there. You already got
them. So if you look at where the growth is going to come from, more casual. And somebody who I was in Philadelphia with gave this great analogy. I can't take credit for it, but I haven't heard it said better. In football, what has made football easy to watch and easy to understand to the non-football enthusiast, or whatever you want to call them, is the yellow line, the first down marker. If you had never watched football before, I could sit you down in front of the TV and say, okay, this is how football works. You get 3 tries to get past the yellow line. And then and if you get in the end zone, you get 6 points. That's the game.
That's very true.
Right? There's so much about football that's so complex and complicated beyond that you may never understand, or you'll learn as you continue to be a fan of the game, right? Like, how does the offensive line work and all these schemes and audibles and, you know, run pass option, all this stuff. But you can enjoy the game only understanding that they have to get past the yellow line in 3 tries, right?
That's true.
No, now, when you look at Overwatch or League of Legends or one of these that are more difficult, I think there's some work to be done in communicating the game, how it's played, how it's won, in ways that are that simple. And I think once we get there, that will really help grow. The other thing is, so next year, Overwatch League and Call of Duty League have all these home market matches, which is awesome for fans. Huge challenge for teams in the league, because they have to attract people to consistently attend their events, right?
It's hard. We know that all too well. About that, yeah.
So what's interesting is I've gotten to know, you know, a lot of the teams in Dallas, the traditional sports teams. The way they look at ticket sales and everything is just has nothing to do with sports. It's a night of entertainment for a family.
Yeah.
Right.
It's so true.
And so, why is going to a Dallas Mavericks game the best option for a family or a couple or an individual person in DFW than either Cowboys or going to Dave and Buster's or staying home or going to Capital Grille or whatever or Topgolf, right?
Right.
It just comes down to entertainment. These esports teams, for the first time, are going to have to answer the same question. Why is going to an Overwatch League game or a Call of Duty game, why is that the best choice of entertainment for my evening? And I think one thing that's a positive is that a lot of fans of those games are not yet going to Mavericks games or Cowboys games or to Topgolf, right?
Right.
It's an untapped market, I think.
Right. So there's going to be some overlap, but I think that's where they have an opportunity, is it's not as much competition, But what's going to keep people coming back? What's going to get mom or dad to come with the kid to bring him, right?
Yeah.
And so I think the opportunity is this, is that you can create such a visually stimulating experience that people who are not gamers, that even do not fully understand the game, will tell their friends and family, you just have to go and see this. Because currently, it is something you have to see. I always say you have to see it to believe it. The energy rivals a hockey game, which people would not think about watching video games, right? But I think there's a lot of innovation to keep people coming back. Because think you can, like there was the Dallas homestand in April in Allen at the event center. And I was doing an activation there for GameStop. My mom and my stepdad, I invited them to be like, oh, you want to see what I do for a living? Come check this out. Well, they came and they're like, okay, John, we get it. Now we're going. You know, because they're like, oh, wow, look at this big crowd. They're cheering really loudly. Look at that big screen. Look at those flashing lights. Cool, John. I'm glad you have a real job. But we're out. We have no desire. And they will never go to another event again because they have no desire to. And so I think there's a lot of work around that can be done. And I'm excited, you know, I'm not trying to just continually give PRG plugs. But at the same time, I'm excited to work with an organization that can create technology that, you know, has done this over and over and over to engage, you know, event fan bases.
That's the cool thing about it. It's that ability to deliver that next generation version of entertainment to create a new definition of entertainment. Right. So can I ask one question that, it's not meant to be.
Okay. Here we go.
I know.
I'm like scared for this one.
No. I was just talking about diversity in the gaming industry. Mm-hmm. Do you guys see the idea of creating these productions as a way to get people of certain demographics that aren't typically considered gamers, women, for example, or I don't know, certain age group or, you know, minorities or whatever it might be. Do you guys still see that, or is it more of the, you see it more as an overall community of just trying to get people in general?
I would say first thing is people in general, because I think part of it is, you know, there's intricacies based on different genders or different demographics, but if you have something that's engaging and fun to watch and interesting to be a part of, I think those things fall by the wayside a little bit. Now, I think the opportunity to say what's currently happening that is only engaging white males, for example, that can be adjusted to also engage other demographics, other genders, right? That'd be an interesting thing to do a deep dive in and to figure out. I do know when you look at gaming as a whole, just from a male-female perspective, if you take out mobile gaming, it's about 70-30, 70 male. When you put in mobile gaming, which includes Candy Crush.
There's Sia. Your demographic right there.
You're right about 50-50.
Yeah.
And so mobile is also the fastest growing segment of esports, specifically like in China. You see it growing massively. They do have mobile esports pros. Okay. Complexity Gaming here in Dallas, they have a guy who plays Fortnite on a phone. That's how he plays it. So he's a mobile gaming pro. I've seen AT&T sponsor mobile gaming tournaments. I think there's a challenge in the presentation of that because it looks a little bit like a bunch of people at a bus station on their phone, with the exception of the screen behind them where you can see it. I would recommend you just cover maybe like neck down so you can't see that they're on a phone, and then you would see it just like any other esports event. That's something to look into, but... Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't know. My question to you would be, what have traditional sports done to cater to, you know, to women or to other
demographics, right? Like,
yeah.
And that's the interesting thing is you're seeing multiple type of activities, right, to attract that. So it's not just purely, here's a hockey game or NFL game, we'll say, outside of, you know, Texas Stadium. They have like a throwing section, right? You can throw a football into a hole or whatever. Engage
like audience
in different ways, right?
Stuff.
Well, I think a big thing too is, I'm gonna go off, but just even introducing women's apparel. I mean, you guys, like, women's 100%. Apparel in sports, like, that's only a couple years old. Like, that's crazy.
It's shocking I think there was some famous actress, I can't remember who it was, but she came out with her own line of clothes that was Major League Baseball brands.
Yeah. Oh,
but they had
Alyssa Milano.
There you go. Yeah. But they were cut and fit for women.
Yeah.
Which is shocking.
That it took that, that long.
Yeah, it took that long, but also that all you have to do is say, hey, women, how do you want your shirt to fit? We'll make those too. And it's just like this massive lift, right? Yeah. But there are, I think esports is much more progressive in that way. I have some good friends in the esports apparel industry. Ult Esports Apparel, my favorite brand. The owners of that brand are, you know, shout out, good friends of mine. But, you know, they make apparel that's, you know, made for women. I think too that the opportunity that esports has is that as it's coming, it's arriving more recently, it has an opportunity to change things because it's more difficult to change things if you've done it forever.
Right.
Right. So the traditional sports, they've done these things forever. I mean, what, Major League Baseball just get video review yesterday, right? It's like how it damages the game. What, that you know it was a home run or not?
Exactly.
So it's difficult to change things that have always been. So esports can be the change agent in a number of different ways. When you talk about paying people in college, right? When you talk about, like, I mean, the Overwatch League, there's one female in the Overwatch League because there can be, because male and female can play together. That's something where you're probably not going to see a woman in the NFL. I know one of the professional soccer players has been, you know, looking into potentially kicking, which would be super cool. But because you don't have some of those physical limitations that you have in traditional sports, you are on the same playing field. And it's one of those things that once you see it more, then it starts to happen more. I think as you start to see more female gamers on the pro level, then you're going to have more girls seeing that it's possible.
Right.
And then you're going to see that integrate. And I was at the Overwatch League Finals, quite a few women in the audience as well. I think it is something that caters more to both genders and a pretty diverse group initially. But it's a great question to kind of have on the radar to look at, like, how do we continue to move that forward?
So my second question to that would have been, so how much of it is a responsibility of the game manufacturer to attract multiple personalities versus, you know, having PRG having to carry the weight and burden of creating an event? That's
sure. Well, one thing that's unique about esports is that the publisher owns everything. They own the IP of the game. So like the NFL does not own football. Right. If we wanted to start our own football league, the three of us right now, we could. Right. If you wanted to start your own league playing Fortnite or League of Legends, you cannot because the intellectual property is owned by the publisher. And so, yeah, a lot of that responsibility does fall on publishers. To their credit, when you look at a game like Overwatch, you know, they have different characters and a lot of them look human. The heroes, and they are very diverse. So I think that's a piece of it too, right? Is like, do I identify with the character that I'm playing? And so I know at least for Overwatch, they do give a lot of options in that regard. League of Legends, nobody looks like humans, right? So that's a little bit different.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think a piece of that has to do with how they're creating the game, what the game is, but also too, it's such a gamble. Is a game going to be popular or not?
Right.
You have all of these games.
I just had an idea.
Go for it.
Hashtag new business idea.
Uh-oh.
We're going to make millions and solve the world problems.
Okay. We're jumping in the esports game.
Here we go.
Here we go. No one, we're going to copyright it by the time this gets released. So too late. Now, if you do want to get more of that community engagement to get multiple and diversity and whatever, or get people into a game, there's a couple things here we can go about this. Is you've got the primary game where everyone's watching the actual event. I can see where you could have like side rooms where it's here, learn how to play this game as a beginner. And here's some coaches that will teach you how to play the game. So you look for this certain, here's certain things to look for.
Yeah.
So it would prepare them to come in. So if it is like a parent that doesn't play, they can sit there.
Get like a 101 on it.
Yeah. For like 10, 15 minutes just to get a vibe. And then I could also see another room of here's a next game. Do you want to beta test if they're trying to pimp out the next generation game or whatever to start getting pre-sales? I'm just saying there's ways to get people in a little bit earlier on at the ground level. Or they could say, hey, having access to this tournament, you're going to be one of the first people to look at the next whatever game.
Right.
I just had that idea.
No, it's not a bad idea. The problem is it's such a toss-up as to whether anything's going to catch on or not. In fact, Fortnite, the Battle Royale genre, which is 1 versus 100, you drop in and it's one you against everybody else. That was their last effort on this game before they gave up on it.
Wow.
Really?
And so it was kind of like, yeah, I don't know all the specific details. I need to look back to give you specific details on it. But yeah, they had another genre. They're trying this game and it was kind of last effort before they got rid of it. Like, well, let's see if Battle Royale helps, if that'll work, and just boom, like wildfire, right?
Wow.
And so a game before that was PlayerUnknown's Battleground, PUBG. And so it's like a more realistic version of Fortnite. It's kind of like Call of Duty Fortnite mix, the visuals, if you will. And so that was super popular. And then Fortnite did that same genre. And then that took off like crazy. And it's skewed a little younger because it's not blood and bullets. It's more, you know, T for teen, if you will. PUBG actually sued Fortnite for the Battle Royale genre. But then they ruled you can't own a genre of a game, you know. But, I mean, there's so many games that come out so often. It takes a ton of capital, number one, to make a game. You have no idea what's going to catch fire. Call of Duty is one of the very few that I think they sell more copies than anybody every single year. But they absolutely have down years. A few years ago, I think they sold about half of what they were planning to do or something like that. And they're like, oh, crap, let's go back to the, you know, Modern Warfare and Black Ops and those games. So hard to figure out. And that's one of the big question marks gaming. Mark Cuban said, I'll never go, you know, fully in on esports because of the IP that's owned by the publisher, but also, you know, franchise fatigue. People get tired of a game, a new game comes out. I mean, if you were betting, I mean, PUBG looked like it was going to conquer the world until Fortnite came out. And then Fortnite just killed PUBG, and they still have tournaments and everything, but the viewership is far lower. Yeah. And then another game called Apex Legends by EA came out, very similar to Fortnite and PUBG, a little different. EA didn't even know that was going to blow up. In fact, they were concerned with their release that if they hyped it up too much and it flopped, that it would be another
bad
strike against the company. So they didn't even announce it before it came out. And then they had this great strategy with a bunch of streamers and pro gamers playing it the first day. It really caught on. But they were then not prepared to scale it the way that they would have had they known it. And so it's still, you know, it's a very popular game and everything. But week one, it was like, is this the Fortnite killer? And it's like, no, it's not the Fortnite killer. And will there ever be one? Fortnite has their finger on the pulse of what gamers want. They're able to adjust the game all the time. They did a super cool collaboration, which I think was awesome for both Borderlands 3 and Fortnite. But Borderlands collaborated with Fortnite, another video game, a different publisher, different company, and you essentially could play Borderlands inside of Fortnite.
So
that's an oversimplification. But the cool thing is, like, Fortnite can make it their game whatever they want it to be. In fact, it's gone from being more of a game to more a social media platform.
Yeah.
So Fortnite is more the Facebook of Gen Z than even like how you would compare it to Mario or something from way back in the day. It's insane what they've done, and they're always making updates. They just know what people want. And, you know, now there's a lot of pressure on them to maintain what they've built, but, you know, they seem to know what they're doing.
I know we're running out of time. I really want to ask this question, though, because we talked a little bit about it. I'm a big Ballers fan. Like, everybody's... And there was a comment on an episode a couple weeks ago where Rick Fox is talking, get in on esports, right? So you got all these people throwing money at esports.
Yeah.
He called it the Wild West, which always is a scary term because it's the can't lose. You're working with brands trying to get in on this and partner. Can you give some advice or mistakes to avoid as companies are looking at esports, looking at investing in something like this? Because you're going to have a lot of people who don't know what they're doing when everybody's jumping in, and how can they avoid that?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'll say two things. One is, I don't think that every brand or company should be in esports. But secondly, I'll say it could make sense for brands that initially it might not appear to make sense. And I'll give an example of that. So what I always tell every brand who wants to get into esports is I tell them if the experience of the community is not better as a result of your brand being part of it, you should not be in it.
Oh, interesting.
Because I think in traditional sports, to compare it to traditional sports, we're used to brands. Like, nobody's mad at Albertsons flying a mini blimp in AT&T Stadium, right? We're like, oh, that's kind of cool. But we're not like, Albertsons, how are you enhancing my game experience, right?
And I've never asked that question, no.
Yeah, and so, and I also think that the way brands look at traditional sports, which isn't wrong, I don't think, but they look at it more, what can I get out of the fan base? And I think the I think we've been normalized to that, right? So we're fine with brands sponsoring to us. Gamers, however, they've done this without brands up until this point. And I can tell you, coming from the skateboarding culture, which is much more skeptical than even gamers, is like, where were you when I wasn't cool?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right? Yep. Where were you when you couldn't make money off of me? But just like anybody who, you know, like when you, I don't know, maybe you become a success or something, all your friends from high school are like, hey, what's up, John? Remember when we were friends? Nope, I don't. So what I would say is, you know, look at, you know, these different ways to enhance the gaming experience. Look at content. Content is king. Everybody's always on their phone. Whether we want kids on phones or not, they're on them. And they are either consuming your content or somebody else's. And it's probably somebody else's. So what is your content strategy? How are you giving them unique content that adds value to their experience? Also, you know, what is the fan experience? How can you, you know, enhance that being at an event or watching from home? Also, fans want to play as much as they want to watch. So can you give them more opportunities to compete that they wouldn't without you? And then unique experiences is kind of the fourth pillar that I have in mind is, you know, outside of these things, what are just some like really cool, unique experiences that you can give to people? We know young people value experiences more than even owning products, right? So if you can give them something that's this selfie moment to generate FOMO with their friends, right? I mean, that gives, you know, that gives them a lot of credibility in their own social circles, and your brand's embraced as a result. You have to make the experience better. If you don't, you shouldn't be in it, or you should adjust your strategy. The other thing is, it may not make sense initially, but as you dig in deeper, there could be an opportunity. My favorite example of this is Turtle Wax sponsoring Optic Gaming. Yeah.
Okay.
Right? Initially, you're like, what? Yes, that is the car wax we're talking about. Turtle Wax sponsored Optic Gaming. Optic Gaming was the king of content under Hector Rodriguez, who's a legend in esports. You're like, well, how does that make sense? Well, the Call of Duty team for Optic, one of their players, Crimsix, has a Porsche. He loves Porsches. He's always posting on Instagram about his Porsche, right? Hector has a G-Wagon. Another guy has a nice motorcycle, right? And so these guys are creating content that's very engaging, but they're also very organically cleaning their cars with this product, right? They worked with Crimsix specifically, who he had has a signature controller with Scuf Gaming, and it has this kind of circuit board pattern on it. Well, they applied a wrap to his car that was the same design as his signature controller. They had his car at every Call of Duty World League stop, and it was the Turtle Wax Porsche. People were taking pictures of it, etc. Furthermore, how does every 16-year-old see their Honda Civic as their Porsche, right? So they see their, you know, Hector, and they see Crimsix and these other guys cleaning their luxury cars with this product, and that's them in their minds as they're cleaning their Honda Civics. Turtle Wax saw the biggest lift in sales, more than any other sponsorship in 20 years.
Wow.
Genius. So there are opportunities there that can make sense, but you just have to really dive in deep. And it really is about adding value, is, you know, maybe overstated that
and
is.
Creativity.
Yeah. Well, I love it.
This has been awesome. John, if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, where is the best place to reach you?
LinkedIn and Twitter. So my Twitter is John at John Davidson, but zeros instead of O's. So JHNDVDS0N.
Okay.
And then LinkedIn, just look up John Davidson PRG, and there's a picture of a guy skateboarding in a suit. And
all
that's
right.
Me.
Well, we'll link those in our show notes too. John, thank you so much. See ya, anything?
Can you please come back? And I think
there's so much more to talk about. Yeah.
So much more. And I think what we do need to do is go to an event.
Yeah.
And then bring you back on, if you don't mind, to
Absolutely.
Do our thoughts on it after the fact.
Yeah.
Would love to.
All right, cool. Well, John, thank you so much again.
Thanks for having me.